Today's show, we talk more about Michigan, of course. We pick some interesting games. What's it like stealing 2 million dimes? And race for the case.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Unless they do get to Harbaugh, it seems unlikely to me. I think this would be a Pandora's box that Big Ten does not want to open.
Russ Gellinger.
These people are crazy. We just read a story on these people who are taking whatever, 25,000 pounds in dimes. And then before that, we read a story about a Michigan man with a manifesto. People are crazy.
And SI's Pat Forty.
You put manifesto on something, that's nice alliteration, but it kind of raises alarms. You might have been better off just calling it like Michigan dossier or something.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and LaFaire, Michigan continues his grip to college football. It's really a great scandal, and I understand there's probably Michigan fans. Probably Jim Harbaugh disagrees, but it is a great scandal in that a lot of times the scandals in college athletics involve we're talking about like Georgia, you know, people die, you know, car wreck. I don't even want to get into it. I mean, there's a lot of things. This is, you know, did a guy steal some signs? Innocent people were not harmed by this. Although maybe Ryan Day, but maybe not. So it's a great one, right? Everyone's got an opinion. Does it matter? Does it not matter? What's going on? And it has been a drip, drip, drip. This is a painful scandal for Michigan. Much better to have everything come off, rip the Band-Aid off in like one massive report or one big, right?
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, this, and everyone going crazy.
Drip, drip, drip.
You know who drip, drip, drip helps? Your friendly podcasters right here.
We're not opposed to drip, drip, drip. Don't blame us.
That's right.
Don't blame us. But yeah, drip, 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 drip. So the last thing we had is, you know, there could be something new. I'm sure there will be something new by the time you hear this.
Probably.
It was the Washington Post report, and it set up some intriguing things. What struck me was, let's go through it a little bit at a time, okay? Let's go through this. This paragraph pretty much was the story. The investigation that's threatening to disrupt Michigan's football season began after an outside investigative firm approached the NCAA with documents and videos the firm said it had obtained from computer drives maintained and accessed by multiple Michigan coaches. According to two people familiar with the matter, evidence suggests the scandal's impact could broaden. So it went on to say there was no proof that Jim Harbaugh, there was the link Jim Harbaugh, but it said it had this stuff. So I think there's a couple things on this scandal. Let me try. I'm doing my best here. I'm not good at this, but I'm doing my best. We got to find out how many people knew about this. So this has always been the case, right?
Yes.
Did Harbaugh know? Did you order the code red? Did he not know, but the coordinators knew? Did he not know, but everybody else knew, so he probably should have known? You know, like, did the guy have a, you know, was he called like, Connor McVideotape Stallions or something like that, right? So if Harbaugh knew and was ordering and orchestrating it and the school was funding it, that would be one level of scandal. If it is somewhere in the middle, there's something else. If it's a guy on his own, it's this scandal. It's all violation, in my opinion. It's just, is it a small deal, a big deal? I'm kind of the, it's a deal, but it's not the big deal. So we didn't find out anything about that, but we did find multiple, there are a couple things in this thing that are pretty interesting, obviously. Multiple Michigan coaches. Now, what I want to know from the Associated Press or the Washington Post is that a coach, what is a defined coach?
Right. Yeah. That's they did not do in the story because.
Yeah. Position coach, coordinator. Yeah.
Right. Well, there's 10 full-time coaches, but there's 9 million other people working in the building. And we know that Connor Stallions was not a coach. He was an analyst. You know, he was
not in that the 10 full-timers that count as far as on-field coaching. But so, who exactly or else has access to that computer drives?
Yeah, so that question unanswered. Now we get to the more interesting parts. So, but it certainly suggests it's more than just one guy. Multiple. So whether it's multiple analysts, whether it's multiple coaches, that's a big distinction. Is it a lone wolf? Well, maybe it's three lone wolves, or it's like how lone is lone, right? At what point are we? I don't know.
Three lone wolves or a pack, Dan?
Yeah, it's a pack of wolves pretending to be lone. This is what we want to know. Who knew? What did they know? And who was funding it? Also, they said they were ready to spend $15,000 on tickets. I thought that was very low.
Mm-hmm.
I bet they had to spend more because they're buying tickets all over the place. But $15,000. Now everyone's like, this guy only makes $55,000. Yes, but he's not from a family that is if I'm going it's Occam's or Oxum's. I don't know which one it is. So I'm going to say
Occam,
them both.
I believe.
Occam. Okay. I thought that's what I was saying. Occam's razor. I see this as like, hey, Dad, I need some money. I'm trying to get ahead. More than a conspiracy. I don't know. Like, where do you think you got the money? I see family involved more than someone this ambitious. And this, we'll get to the Richard Johnson SI story too. That's pretty. But I still see that. And then, hey, Coach Harbaugh, can you cut me a check? Or he can't Venmo, so cash or something like that. Oh, what do you think, Pat? What'd you make of that? $15,000.
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't have an informed guess, and that's right now at this point, it's all a guess. Was he getting money from someone else and not telling him what it was for? Or is there a petty cash drawer?
Yeah.
In Schembechler Hall, there used to be petty cash drawers at football facilities back when you were slipping money to players.
Sure was. Might still be. Yeah.
Might still be.
Like I said, so, helping somebody pay for gas money.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. But that interesting, right? Who funded it? But we don't know.
Yeah. One of them. The layers out of this. What other coaches are involved? Who paid the money for these tickets? If it was about $15,000, which I just did. I think the story said 40 games or more than 40. If it's 40, it's $375 a ticket. That may work out, but they were getting good tickets and they were getting them late. So,
it looked like they were planning ahead to budget, really conscientious.
Well, the thing, there is also an unanswered question in the main part of the story, the lead about how the NCAA was tipped off about this, which, answers one of the questions, but it leaves you with another. And it's who hired a firm to investigate Michigan football and potentially hack into their computer system and uncover documents that wasn't addressed in the story. I don't. It wasn't really mentioned too. How exactly they got access to the computers and the files, and then what they got on those files, right? Was an interesting graph about you're talking about the expenses and like the schedule of games and this thing is getting a little deeper here, and you're just continuously left with more and more questions.
My dream of Ryan Day funding this thing is that paragraph enthused me. I don't believe Ryan Day. I'm just, I'm trying to have fun here.
Right.
Maybe it's Urban. Urban. I don't know.
Maybe. But that's the thing. And I mean, look, we have all written these kinds of stories, and sometimes what you leave out is intentional and it makes you wonder why. And there is no addressing whatsoever who the outside firm is, who hired the outside firm, what how that part of it played out, how the outside firm got the information and then delivered the information to the NCAA. And so whether that's protecting sources or whether that's flat, the Washington Post like the rest of us doesn't know. I don't know, but that was an interesting, completely unanswered, unaddressed even question. They never even like said, you know, the person behind this is unknown or whatever. There's none of that.
Yeah. I mean, if you read this, an outside firm approached the NCAA with documents and videos the firm said it had obtained from computer drives maintained and accessed by multiple Michigan coaches. Potentially, they could be using private laptops, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stallion or whatever. Perhaps. Or it could have been a university computer. Isn't that stealing the documents and videos? Well, like, isn't that stealing? Like, yeah.
That's
stealing signs.
That's the question.
And, hey,
let me put it this way. In our wildest imaginations, because that's all we have on this crazy story.
Mm-hmm.
If another school or somebody funded a third party to break in or somehow steal information off a university or a private computer.
Seems bad.
That would seem worse than the sign stealing.
Well, yeah, you're stealing highly confidential, private information about sign stealing. So you're stealing the sign stealing information. This is where we are.
Maybe it's a private computer. It was shared. I don't know. But like, does the NCAA have rules on like you have to? You have to, in a criminal case, you have to obtain evidence in a proper manner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they have any of that?
I don't know.
Good question. I would think that they do. You would think,
like,
but that's,
even by
that's
launching
question,
this investigation, we talked last time. Like, I think my prediction is 90% of the damage has already been done. I don't know. We can get to what. Could they literally stop the Michigan season? Unless they do get to Harbaugh. It seems unlikely to me. I think this would be a Pandora's box that Big Ten does not want to open. If you're going, we got to end this guy's season. Guess what? What happens next year when there's this or something else?
Yeah, right.
Like, that is a dangerous Pandora's box to open. Well, this guy cheated here. Why is that any different than this? Like, so I mean, unless we come out with some massive, massive operation here, I find that Michigan's going to get to play the season. Now, do you punish them after, even if Harbaugh didn't know? Sure. But how hard, what, all that? Harbaugh's going to be NFL. They don't care.
Yeah.
Suspend him for as many years as you want. Like, you didn't want him around, he ain't going to be around. Maybe. No, he's got to get a job. But that's all like later. So I would think that that's my opinion. I think like this speculation, Big Ten will suspend them for the rest of the year or vacate games. That to me is crazy. And if they do it, I don't know, man. I would not recommend that. I'd have to hear more about it. But like the NCAA, just by launching this investigation, has, you know, like Harbaugh will never live it down. Michigan fans get yelled at. Michigan, you know, all like a lot of the damage is reputational, not anything else.
Well, yeah.
And so to do that off of a potential stolen document, I don't know. I don't know if I can believe this Washington. Like, would the NCAA actually, like, is this what you want? Third party PIs out there getting info from potentially like hacked ways? Like, oh my, it's going to be great for this podcast, but I mean, I'm all for it, but holy,
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
Again, we don't know the trail of, you know, where the information was, who got it and who delivered it and how they got it. So we don't know that. And could there be illegalities involved? I suppose there could be. But I know this, like, look, as investigative reporters, we want information.
Oh, yeah.
And you start with the information, man, then you start worrying about, okay, how was this obtained? And go from there. So, like, I don't know. If it were me, I'm like, hey, give me the information and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting because it's similar to the sign stealing situation. It's like, you know, Harbaugh and the coaches obviously used this information, right? But did they know how it was obtained? And it's kind of a similar question. Like, did they know how it was obtained? Did they care how it was obtained? Because how it was obtained is obviously the NCAA violation, not using the information really, or not stealing signs necessarily, but it's the way it was stolen, the way the information. So it's like a similar situation in each case. Do we care that the information from computers about sign stealing was obtained illegally? And did Michigan coaches care that the information they used to steal signs was obtained against NCAA rules? Aha.
I love this sport.
I need a drink.
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean,
yeah, we can tie ourselves in incredible knots over this, and people are plenty willing to do so, or at least just believe the what they want to believe. But
if I'm the NCAA, look, I don't really care. But if I'm a Michigan, if it's my computer,
yeah,
right.
Like this better be.
It's against the law, not just rules.
That detail to me was like, oh my goodness, how do you even use this? And now you might say, okay, we're going to take this information and we're going to launch an investigation and see if it's true. We're going to take it like it's a tip. But in this case, because of the charge, and like, I think, again, barring you're going to cancel Michigan season, which I don't, we just haven't had that much fire yet to do that anywhere close to it, in my opinion, but it's possible. You've done your damage just by, like, what are you going to do now? Go in the investigation and go, oh, well, we illegally obtained that, but we leaked it out. It got leaked out anyway, or got out anyway. I don't know. It's a wild deal. I just think, like, college sports, the NCAA serves the like, if I'm going to some associate AD somewhere, I'm like, this is not how we want this to go, because there's all sorts of fans that will hire PIs.
Yeah. Kidding me?
I mean, or try something. So yeah. I don't know. That
this
to
could
me
be
was
a, in- could be a boom time for PIs in the Big Ten. But to that point, speaking of the Big Ten, who's been the most quiet entity and group of schools in this whole thing? Like, we've heard Kirby Smart do a little chirping about Michigan maybe spying on them. We heard Dan Lanning do a little chirping. You heard anybody in the Big Ten? Oh, no, they're playing this very quietly. I would imagine there's been a league directive. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about this. And the Big Ten sure isn't talking about it.
Yeah. Rule and
there's probably been, been an SEC directive too. Talk about it as much as possible.
That's entirely possible.
I had a coach say to me, he posited this. Okay, so you can't obtain information illegally. So one thing that does happen, I mean, we know that this is not, look, they all steal signs. You're allowed to steal them in game, right? No problem. You're just not allowed
in-game
to advance scout.
Yeah.
Or TV, or the All-22, or whatever. You're not allowed to advance scout. Okay, fine. We know that some of these schools have advanced scouted before, okay? This is not the first person to think of this. But so one thing that happens is someone steals the signs for opponent during the game. Then they contact their buddy on the other staff that week. They're playing them and say, hey, you want his signs. You want your opponent's signs. And so then they send the signs over. Is that electronically obtained illegally? Right? Because that's pretty common. That's why coaches have to continue to alter as much as they can their signs across the year. Because someone figured it out in week two, and their college teammate is now the defensive coordinator at the week four opponent. And they go, hey, here's what we found.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that happens. Sharing information happens quite a bit.
I don't think a lot of coaches want that sweep of their to go through, right? That makes sense. And so now you're like, well, did I steal the signs illegally? Oh, geez. Like, so that's an interesting bit. Any more thoughts on this before I get to I thought Pat's colleague Richard Johnson had a really good piece on stallions at Michigan, at Sports Illustrated. Any more thoughts on this? Yeah. I don't know where to go with this.
Just briefly, in addition to the the left out information here. What that has also helped spawn the third iteration of Michigan fan coping here. The first one was there's no proof.
Of course.
The second one after there was proof was this doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And the third one after that, you know, this is looking more and more extensive and detailed, is who ratted us out?
Who ratted us
and
out?
And the theories are out and there. The media everywhere.
Hates us. The media hates us, or the NCAA hates us. That's always the third. Third wave of these. Yeah. Every school.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're in wave three.
Believe me, whoever hired this firm, that to me is now the most interesting part of this story.
Yeah.
Oh, by it's fascinating. Far.
Okay. It's fascinating. Unless they get Harbaugh running this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm still sticking with my theory. It's probably maybe it's more than one guy, whatever. It's probably not as extensive to where it's running up all the way high. Maybe they should ask more questions, whatever. But to me, somebody funded this. That, oh my.
Yeah.
That's right? Third party investigated. Wasn't a whistleblower. That's what it says in the post. Anyway, Ross, you got anything else?
No.
Okay. We'll hope. We can hope. I threw out impossible script developments involving Ohio State funding this, and it's not been ruled out. I think this story is going to get wilder.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that it's going to get much worse. I don't know. If I'm a Michigan fan, I read that Washington Post story and actually thought it says they had nothing to get to Harbaugh. And that to me would be the, like, everyone was flipping out like it was a negative story. And I'm like, if I was them, I'd take that as like, okay.
I guess. Although, it doesn't have to get to Harbaugh, I don't think, to be a pretty significant.
It's significant, issue. But are they going to shut the season down?
No, I don't think that. I still don't think they're going to shut the season down. Although, again, I would, certainly the NCAA doesn't have the power to do that. The Big Ten, I would like to hear from them. Now, they've got a window of a week here where they can stay as quiet as they want because Michigan didn't play in this weekend. Yeah. So, this can be the week where the Big Ten councils among itself, so to speak, and decides if they, what can they do? What do they want to do? What will they do?
Go ahead, Ross.
That's one of the big questions too, right? Is you wait around for the NCAA process, which is usually months and months and can include maybe years even, or does the Big Ten step in some way and conduct their own investigation, suspend people? I mean, I'm sure, there's the authority to do that. Just like any league, if the presidents, the group of presidents, the board gives that power to the commissioner, then that I'm sure can happen. So that's kind of a question as well. I'm sure that the other Big Ten programs, from administrators to coaches, are not real happy about this.
Yeah. What is the level of back channel communication now with the office from the other 13 schools? What are you going to do about this? Are you going to do anything or not? Or are they like, whatever?
Yeah, they're not normally like, I would caution to step back and take a 30,000 foot view of this and go, what are we walking into as precedent? But that is not how football coaches operate.
Oh, no.
Aggrieved football coaches do not operate that way. I would bet 13, many of them, if not all of them, would like, suspend Harbaugh for the rest of the year, do this, that, whatever. But to the process, like if I'm, I have no idea, but if I'm Michigan, first thing I'm doing is going, how was this obtained? Let's do an investigation on how this obtained. Then we'll talk to you about, this is going to, you could easily drag this out. I go back to the bit of like, you can either end this season. I mean, if you're, the University of Michigan at this point is just damage control. Like, this is something happened.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy had some stuff, it seems. Clearly, you guys are scouting. Clearly, whatever advantage you get from scouting or not is there. Something happened. Mm-hmm. It's all about, like, how bad does it get? And the number one thing to me, if you're Michigan, you protect this season and you hope to avoid future postseason bans. Anything else probably won't matter in the long run. You're probably going to lose your coach to the NFL. That's a blow, but maybe not. Harbaugh, it's total chaos at Michigan.
Yeah, right.
The guy, he's a good coach, but I don't think he knows how to run an operation. Like, it's just mayhem. There's something every.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, look, there's been a lot of gifted, talented coaches who eventually it's like, okay, we got to move on. You know, I mean, it's Urban Meyer.
It's just you wear out your deal. It's exhausting.
Yeah. Yes.
And you're like, we can get a. We're not. We'll get another coach, and we can win again.
Sure.
I would think everybody looking for a job would want that job, right?
Oh, absolutely. In the shape that Michigan's in right now, you bet.
That collective setup.
Yeah.
With the fan base energized like it is. And you can fundraise off of the world's out to get us.
Yeah. Right.
And I would think that they sit there and go, we're going to get the pick of the litter this year on whoever we want as a coach. Mm-hmm. Or something close. Was Jim Harbaugh worth this? No, actually, probably not. Even if he did, you know, I guess they win the title. But all right, quickly on Richard Johnson's story on Stallions. Pat, you can recap it a little better than me, potentially. But I found it to be very interesting because it gave an insight. The guy had a 500-600-page manifesto on how to run Michigan football. The guy he's an acolyte. He's a true believer.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that Jim Harbaugh believes this stuff, but he believes, you know, leaders and the best. And I mean, like, you put somebody in there is like an activist, not a analyst.
Yeah.
And he's going to do anything for Michigan to win and potentially, allegedly, jumped way above, way past the line of what a recruiting analyst should be doing.
Yeah, for sure. It was a heck of a story by Richard, who had gotten a text conversation, a long, you know, multiple week text conversation that Stallions had with somebody who was a student who wanted to get into the coaching world. And Stallions basically said, well, here's what I'm doing. Here's how I do it. And here's people I know, including name drop Jed Fish, the Arizona coach, some other people, and bragged. Maybe he's telling the truth, maybe not, but certainly got the radar up at the Naval Academy that he had illegally obtained academic information for 500 student athletes from the Navy.
Yeah,
that would be a crime. But that's when he was at the Naval Academy. He was a student there, student assistant with the football program part time. But yeah, what came through from it to me, first of all, yes, here's a great snapshot of a obsessive, maybe borderline crazy guy who would do anything to become a successful coach, and especially a successful Michigan coach. And that's where the Michigan Manifesto comes in. I was at ACC Basketball Media Days, and there were a lot of people talking about that story there. One of them said, you know, you put manifest on something, that's nice alliteration, but it kind of raises alarms. You might have been better off just calling it like Michigan dossier or something.
Yeah.
Put manifesto out there and everybody starts thinking you're nuts.
You know where Ted Kaczynski went to school?
Mm-hmm.
Michigan.
Yeah. It's all becoming clear now.
Yes. The most famous manifesto, or at least one of the more famous ones. Yeah. It was a bad choice of words.
Yeah.
There's so many little secret comedy parts to the story. It's like,
no, right?
You didn't just name it, man. This scandal is so funny in so many ways.
Yeah. It was such a great read, and it I think gave us a little window into the mind of this person. And we now see we're getting all these different pieces, and we're seeing it, how elaborate the scheme is and how to the lens that he went, and maybe others, but certainly him, went to do all this. And you're like, who would do this? You know, what kind of person would do this? And I think Richard's story answered that question.
Yes. It showed us what kind of person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's talk some games that intrigue us. We're going to pick games. This is not a great slate this week, but we will pick some games. But even if we pick them, let's talk about whatever. What game? And we talked to Oregon, Utah last show. If you want to listen to Oregon, Utah, listen to the last show. If you want to hear other Michigan discussions, you can go to the last three or four now. At this point, it's rolling along. You can do that. So go back and listen. If you missed the show, hit play and listen to it for about 5 minutes. It'll help our numbers. We need your help. Come on, people. Sure. If everyone's cheating in college football, we might as well.
Sure. Well, you know, we are the podcast of record that asked for you to keep dead people subscribed.
Yes. So. Can we cheat in podcasting? How do we do it? How do we do it? A third party investigation.
To find out.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to hire that. Right. I think Barstool offered Stallions a job. pretty funny. All right. What game intrigues you this week, Pat Forty?
Definitely the cocktail party. You know, that first of all, it's always a great rivalry game, great setting. It's the Deep South version of the Red River game with the 50-50 ticket split and the two fan bases from the neighboring states who hate each other and get together and just drink their faces off before, during, and after the game. But to me, Georgia's schedule starts now. They have not played much of anybody. Kentucky was ranked at the time. They smoked Kentucky. Now Kentucky looks kind of meh. So the next five games are all potentially, you know, high level, high energy, high commitment kind of games where the Dogs had better show up, and they're going to have to show up without their best player, Brock Bowers, for who knows how many of these games, maybe all of them. We're not sure. He had the tightrope surgery. We don't know when he'll be back. But you've got Florida, neutral field. Then you turn around and play a number 16 ranked Missouri team, having one of its best seasons in a while. So look out. You better be ready for that. Then you turn around and play number 12 Mississippi. No piece of cake. And then you go on the road, Tennessee. And then you finish with another rivalry game, Georgia Tech. So you've got three ranked opponents bookended by two rivalry games. That's a heck of a five-week stretch. So we're going to find out for real about the Dogs and whether they can three-peat in the coming weeks here.
We're just picking random games?
Yeah, whatever game interests you.
Well, Kansas hosts Oklahoma at noon Saturday. And we saw Oklahoma beat Texas in a wild one, but and then they had a bye week, and then they came back, and they really struggled at home to UCF. I mean, UCF had them on the ropes. They ended up winning the game by 2 points when UCF couldn't convert a 2-point conversion. Did a trick play. We saw a couple of trick 2-point conversion plays last week that backfired, and that was one. So they came out a little flat there. And now they're going to Kansas, and Kansas doesn't have a starting quarterback, right? He's out. Jalen Daniels.
Jalen Daniels, yep.
Is out again, and they're starting Jason Bean, who's played pretty well.
Yeah, he's a good backup.
He's played pretty well. And they've played well. You know, they've I know they lost to Oklahoma State week before last, but they had a bye week last week, so they're kind of rested. So, boy, this could be an interesting one for the Sooners. And they've got a few tests along the way here. They'll go to at Oklahoma State, and they have to travel to BYU as well. They host TCU in West Virginia. So this is kind of the start of this, you know, last five games that obviously tell us if Oklahoma is going to be a real CFP contender or not. And it kind of starts with this one in Lawrence.
I am going to go, interesting game to me is we're at that stage of the season where, like, you either fall apart completely or you can rally something into a decent season. And mm-hmm. Clemson and NC State are both sitting on that precipice. Both teams 4-3. Game is in Raleigh. It is on the CW. William Christopher Sweeney, Coach Sweeney, said he did not know how to find the CW. Coach, you got to watch All American. It's a great show. Come on, man.
You guys know the Price is Right. They had like the mountain climbing one. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Oh,
what
yeah,
it was called.
Yeah,
I guess
yeah.
It was like mountain climber. Yeah. And they showed like a mountain climber. Doot, 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 doot. Yeah. And then he fall at various times, you know, at the end or whatever, he falls off the cliff. Yeah. Well, somebody put Clemson season. Do, 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 do. Boo, down to the CW.
Yeah, we're at the CW level now. Clemson's like, little old Clemson's on the little old CW. Listen, I will not take CW getting ripped. One of my favorite channels. Spencer James will have none of it. Get with the program. That's where, you know, who the heck? Brian Kelly. Chip Kelly was on the show. He was on the show.
Yeah,
he
made a sure cameo. Was.
Anyway, Clemson needs to win this game. Clemson just needs to win this game. They have to go to NC State. This is a beatable team because this could go horrifically from here on out. They got Notre Dame in 2 weeks at home. They get Georgia Tech. Then they get North Carolina, and then they're at South Carolina. And, I mean, look, you win out, and you end up 9-3, and you're like, hey, we had a pretty good season. We rallied late. Some things happened. We lost in overtime. We lost the last play to Florida State. Some different things, right? But you lose this one, and you're looking at that last four going, because South Carolina is not great this year. They're 2-5, but it's still the rivalry game, and it's at their place. And they beat you last year. So this could get really bad for Clemson if they don't win this game. Now, same for NC State. Their fans are a little maybe less robust in their expectations for good reason. But they've still got Miami, and they've got Carolina at the end. They got a Wake and a Virginia Tech, but they can kind of slink in there. But I just feel like there's a lot of pressure on Clemson to win this football game. And it's not that – this isn't that bad of an NC State team.
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated by that. I think you laid it out pretty well with Clemson, where if they can get to 9-3, you can still say, look, most places in America would love 9-3. It's a bad year for us, so that tells you where we are. But if you start getting out, you go 8-4, 7-5, then you just start looking like a run-of-the-mill program, which is not what Clemson is accustomed to.
Right. All right, got another one?
Sure. Absolutely. Game in my town, Duke and Louisville, two top 20 teams. Cardinals are favored by 4.5. And to me, like, both those teams are very much in the running to play for the ACC championship game. I think Florida State's going to get there with no problem, but who are they going to play? It's not going to be Clemson. Clemson has 3 league losses. So Duke, Louisville, North Carolina. This is one of those kind of ladder games right here. Duke and Louisville, the winner keeps moving forward with one loss in the league and thinks they've got a pretty good chance of getting to Charlotte for that game. The loser is probably out of that picture. So I am intrigued by that. Two good coaches who have done very good work, perhaps faster than expected, Mike Elko at Duke and Jeff Brohm at Louisville.
In Austin, Texas hosts BYU. In Texas without Quinn Ewers, right? Malik Murphy will start. I think Sarkisian announced that just before we got on the pod that Murphy will start. I'm interested, obviously, in seeing if we see any of a one Arch Manning in the game, number one. And number two, look, Texas, since the loss to Oklahoma, and really maybe a little before, there's been some hiccups with Texas along the way here. I mean, they were in a freaking tight one with Houston, and Houston got, unfortunately for Houston, not the greatest call in a measurement sort of spot, you might say, in that game. Well, that could have been really bad for Texas. Then you go back to even the game against, Wyoming. They struggled at home. There were times, obviously, against Oklahoma. So you wonder if BYU can give them a game. And by the way, a little wrinkle in this one, that's where Sarkisian, of course, played, BYU guy. So that's an interesting one. Circle that one and see if maybe the little Manning gets some time.
All right, this is not a I'm not going to say this is going to be a good game. I'm just keeping an eye on this game. Purdue at Nebraska. And I know, yeah. But this is why. Nebraska, under Matt Rhule, year one, they lose at Minnesota. They lose at Colorado. And it's just, the rebuild's going to take a while. And it did when Matt Rhule took over at Baylor. I think he had a one-win season or whatever. He's a slow-build guy. They got crushed at Michigan, 45-7. That's a lot of sign stealing right there. That's a lot of signs. but they've won everything else. Maybe it's not pretty. They only beat Northwestern 17-9. But they should beat Purdue on Saturday. Then they get at Michigan State, and then they finish with Maryland, Wisconsin, and Iowa. And I'm intrigued at where this ends up in Matt Rhule's first season and what he gets done and what the rest of this way could do momentum wise for what I think we all expect to be a Matt Rhule should be. At least I expect Matt Rhule to get Nebraska back to some level of competence that they haven't gotten in a long time. And I feel like this is one of those games that if they're on track, doesn't mean they can't do it, but if they're on track, they take care of these few games. And all of a sudden they're looking at, hey man, we went 8-4 in year one, or we went 9-3 even, or we're walking in late in the year. And that Iowa game is going to be interesting because we're both going to have a good record and all of that. So, and they get Iowa at home. They got to go to Wisconsin, but they get Maryland and Iowa at home. So I think it's a big game in a small way for Nebraska Cornhuskers and where they're going forward.
Yep. I like it. I like it.
Another? We'll do one more.
I got one more. Because I don't think we're going to pick this game, but it deserves to be talked about. Ohio State at Wisconsin. The Buckeyes should win, but they are coming off a big game. And, you know, what's the level of letdown, perhaps, from, you know, a circle on the calendar kind of game. They fell behind Maryland in their game after Notre Dame, and that was even with a week off in between. So this, you're going on the road to a tough place to play, but Dan, kind of as you were talking about Matt Rhule, this is, all right, where is Luke Fickell in the rebuild here? So far, they have really done not much to excite anybody. They lost at Washington State. They lost an ugly-ass game to Iowa in which they scored 6 points. It looked like they were going to follow that with what would have been a truly bad loss to Illinois. They were down late, and they rallied with two long touchdown drives with their backup quarterback. So that showed something, that kind of one of those, you know, culture-building wins that coaches would talk about. But now you got a chance. You could really make this season – you could have people saying, oh, Luke Fickell, yeah. If you can somehow upset the Buckeyes or even play them close, you get smoked and everybody's going to be like, yeah, Luke Fickell, really? Is it? I thought we expected more. So I think kind of a big statement game for the home team Badgers.
I'm not going to do an upcoming game. I'm going to do a game already played. It was a midweek game. It's New Mexico State's win over Louisiana Tech. New Mexico State hit the 6-win mark under Jerry Kill, I think a second straight year, right? They went to a bowl game, I believe they went to a bowl game last year. And I think there's some insane stats. I mean, New Mexico State has obviously struggled in football, you know, before Kill got there, but long before Kill got there. And now to take that team to a couple of bowl games is pretty incredible. And I'm trying to find the stats here. So New Mexico State has appeared in 6 bowls, counting this year will be the 6th bowl game. And by the way, they play 13 games this year, so they actually need one more win to qualify for a bowl. But the thought is that they'll be able to get that. And they can qualify even at 6-7 if not enough bowl teams are eligible. But this is from Brian Fisher with Fox. Jerry Kill responsible for 2 of New Mexico State's 6 bowl appearances. The only other time the program has made back-to-back bowls, 1959 and 1960. So, man, just incredible stuff there and great. That's a great story as well, what's going on there.
All right, 2 stories I got to get to before we get to the picks, the race for the case. We'll get to more games. Some guys ripped off a truck, a tractor trailer in Philadelphia recently. They stole 2 million dimes. $200,000. There was a total of $750,000 in coins in the truck. They couldn't get all of those. They took 2 million dimes worth 200 grand.
How heavy is that?
Well, I think I have the information. A
good
pallet
Lord
of dimes. It was somewhere in here. It's a lot. They couldn't take them all. Needless to say, pretty classic. They then were caught putting them into, actually, I think I have the wrong thing. There's the story. Weeks after the theft, thousands of dimes were converted into dollars at Coinstar machines in Maryland and four different banks in suburban Philly. And the authorities were able to sneak in and see this coming. A pallet of dimes is 2,500 pounds. And they broke open as many as five pallets.
Oh, my. Wow.
Did they think this through?
No. I mean...
Good Lord.
Unless you are going to be content carrying dimes in your pockets like grandpa, you know, for years and paying for things with dimes that way, you're going to get caught. Absolutely. You know, the minute you get greedy and try to change them in like they did, you're busted. As it is, you need to just continue to like pay for all
pay
your meals
dimes?
With dimes.
You would
pay for meals, whatever.
Yeah, but you have a $30 dinner. What's that?
Yeah. That's a lot of
300
dimes.
A lot of dimes.
Yeah, they wouldn't take that. Some of these places are,
stack up the dimes and then it's on TV that someone stole 2 million dimes. You'd be like, might be that guy who had a club sandwich here the other day.
And he gave us 300 dimes for the club sandwich. Yeah. I could raise some alarms.
I think that would be 300. You would stand a better chance of getting away with it that way than if you just went to the Coinstar
right number. I don't even think that's the right number.
You're done for in the social media age, Pat. You can't do that. You can't even go to Cheesecake Factory for the first date.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Imagine trying to pay for a meal in dimes.
Yeah. My wife was telling me about this Cheesecake Factory viral video. Don't take a woman to Cheesecake Factory on the first date, apparently, she said.
Why? What is this? There's too many rules for guys. It's not fair.
Yeah,
what's wrong with Cheesecake Factory? Go cheaper then.
Take them somewhere. Come on.
Hello, Denny's. There was like a list, right? You couldn't do?
Really? Okay.
I mean, come on. It's about quality time with a nice young fella. I mean, you want to impress them. Cheesecake Factory. Nobody leaves Cheesecake Factory upset.
Yeah. What's the point?
I don't know. Anyway, four guys did this heist. Now, they had previously stolen a bunch of frozen shrimp and then hawked that. So these guys will steal anything. So each guy's going to make 50 grand. Like, this is a terrible plot.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
There's a picture of all a bunch of extra dimes crashed on the floor in there too. Like, I mean, like if you're walking down the street, you see a dime, do you stop and pick it up? Like, it's kind of borderline, right?
No.
Right.
No, I don't pick it
up. It's not enough money where you're like,
been, first
a quarter
of all.
I'll pick up for sure.
Yeah. A
dime.
Definitely getting picked up.
I mean, it's inflation.
Dime, it's borderline. Yep.
Yep. All right. One other story.
Russ is bougie. He doesn't pick up
change. Yeah. I don't know where this quarter's been. Could have been up. Could have been. Well, you know.
Why would it be there? Why would it be there?
I don't know. These people are crazy. We just read a story on these people who are taking whatever 25,000 pounds in dimes, and then before that, we read a story about a Michigan man with a manifesto. People are crazy. Who knows where these quarters?
Hey,
have
you heard of butt? Have you heard of butt darts, which actually is played with quarters that are...
God. Yeah. There we go. All right.
Look it up, people. Look it up.
Unplug.
Okay.
Unplug,
okay.
Sean.
We're off. That's it. Whoa. We respect all lifestyle choices.
It's clothed. It's played fully clothed. Clothed.
I don't want to know what you're doing, Pat.
Oh.
Woo, TMI. I have not.
That's bad. I apologize. I talked to a fan of the pod yesterday who said his 12-year-old son now listens, so maybe we should I apologize in advance to him.
Tone it down.
Okay. Bringing this into play.
Finally, they'll get to this. Then we'll get to the race for the kids. AP story out of Florida. It ain't the Olympics, but a group of Floridians plan to host competitions themed according to the collective antics of the beer-loving, gator-possessing, rap sheet-heavy, mullet-wearing social media phenomenon known as Florida Man. We are obviously quite familiar with Florida Man here.
Oh, yes.
Organizers of the Florida Man Games describe the competition as the most insane athletic showdown on earth. It's going to take place in February, St. Augustine, Florida. Among the events... Evading arrest obstacle course.
Good.
Which contestants jump over fences and through yards while being chased by real police officers. The Category 5 cash grab, in which participants try to grab as much money in a wind-blowing booth. The self-explanatory beer belly wrestling. Okay. It's all from the Florida Man Twitter account, which includes headlines such as Florida Man tried to pay for McDonald's with weed.
Should have used dimes.
Can we get Deep Gator over there?
Oh, we need to ask Deep Gator if he can.
Who wins, Florida, Florida by. State? Who's winning Florida or Miami?
Oh, it's man, not rule out. Nah. That's UCF. A Florida State tussle there. Man, I'm gonna say the Gators win that.
Yeah, we have team Olympics. Like, what could they have? Team gymnastics or like, you know, right? Yeah. Who's the Simone Biles of the Florida Gators? It's a lot of competitors down there. All right. There's that. I'm still rattled by whatever the heck Pat was talking about. Let's pick the race for the case. Sean leading 28-20. Ross is 27-21. I am 24-24. Pat 19-29, which means Tat 40. Yes, 19-29 and 3. So if you picked opposite of Pat, you would be beating Sean.
I'm going to have to go back and audit Sean's accounting here. Yeah. All I know is my picks for SI against the spread have a winning record. So how could I be 10 behind?
I don't.
10 below here.
I don't know. Not buying it. Well, tell me who's going to win Florida and Georgia. Georgia given 14.5, 330 on CBS. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm going to take the Gators there. I just think that rivalry game, Florida playing a little better. They've won their last two. And Georgia, you know, is having to cope without their best guy. And it's not a vintage Georgia team. So I'm going to say Georgia wins, but not by 14.5. Thank you for the hook.
Yeah.
So
same.
You're taking
Gators.
Florida.
Yeah, I'm taking Florida.
I'm taking Florida as well. They have been playing better, although I still don't know how they beat South Carolina. That was insane. But they certainly are a resilient group and don't give up. So without Brock Bowers, give me the Gators. With Brock Bowers, I probably would have taken Georgia. I think he's that important.
Yep. Agree. I'm taking Florida with that. Sean, you go. Sorry,
yeah,
jumped
I'll
in
take,
on you.
I'll take Georgia. That state doesn't seem to be distracted by bad tattoo arm wrestling or whatever they have going on at those games in Florida. So I'll take the Bulldogs.
All right. You got lone dogs. That's pretty good.
Yeah, right.
All right. Come on, Gators. We got to catch Sean. Number 8, Oregon at number 13, Utah. Ducks, 6.5-point favorites, 330 on Fox. Ross?
The Ducks are a 6.5-point favorite. Wow. That is shocking to me.
Guess you're taking Utah.
Yeah, for sure. Give me Utah to not just cover but win the game. At home, I think somebody tweeted out I didn't see what the stat was, but whatever it was, Utah was like 30-2 at home versus XX. So Utah at home. I know Oregon. They've got a great team, and I saw them live in person against Washington, and they've got a good enough defense and firepower and running game and all that. But even with the backup that they play with all year, Utah, I think at home for sure keeps it within a touchdown. Give me the Utes.
Yeah, I can't go against Utah getting points at home, like you said. I mean, their record at home is outstanding. This team is a classic Kyle Whittingham team. Piece it together. Do what you got to do. Get better as the season goes along, as his teams tend to do. And I like Oregon, but I just think they're walking into a tough spot here. So I will take the Utes and the points.
Oregon has been tricky so far for me because last week I saw Dan Lanning called a pooch punt on 4th-and-3 where it seemed like he was going to go for it. So has he learned his lesson or is he just trolling all of us? I'll take the home favorites, I guess, in Utah. Let's see what happens.
Gosh. So yeah, I'm going to take Utah. I'm going to take Utah.
Yeah. Had the chance for lone duck.
I know. I want to do it too. I like that offense. But God, Utah just get this stuff done. I'm not doing it. Give me 6.5. It's too many points. I'm taking Utah. Oregon will be thrilled they get out of there with a 1-point victory. We'll go all Utah. Number 20, Duke at number 18, Louisville. Louisville is giving 4. Game is at 3:30 on ESPN. All the games are out of 3:30.
Yeah, which is a bummer. But I like the game. I'm probably going to attend the game and watch the others on my laptop while I'm there. Louisville at home has been very good. Riley Leonard, we still don't know about that ankle. He got re-injured it against Florida State, wanted to go back in the game. Elko didn't put him back in. Is he going to be 100% for this one? We don't know. So I'm going to take something that seems a little more sure, and that's Louisville giving 4 at home.
Defense travels. I know they have the quarterback issue at Duke, but 5th in the country, Duke is allowing less than 14 points a game. So I'm going to say they play good enough defense, they keep it close enough to cover the 4.
That win over Notre Dame for Louisville is so impressive, but Duke has been a consistent for me this year. I'll go with the Blue Devils to cover.
I'll take the Cards. I like them. I like that defensive line. I'll take them. Mississippi State at Auburn. Auburn is giving 6.5. Man, this is a 3:30 on SEC Network. This is how kind of lacking in great games there is. This is one of those whoever loses had a bad season. Anyway, right. Auburn, 6.5-point home dog. Ross?
So 6.5-point home favorite, right?
Favorite. Yeah. My bad.
Auburn favorite by 6.5. So you may recall a game in 2008, I think it was, against Auburn, Mississippi State, that ended 3-2. This one may be 2-0. These are two offenses that really, really struggle moving the football. Just top to bottom. And two defenses that have played actually pretty well and played well in some big games. So this over under 41.5. Oh, man. Put all your dimes on the under there. But I'm actually going to take the road dogs to cover. Not necessarily win, but to cover the 6.5. I don't even know if either one of these teams will score 6.5 or more points. So
I have very little conviction about this game. Frankly, I have none. neither team is very good. But if I like Utah because of the home field and I like Louisville because of the home field, I know what Auburn can get going on its home field. So I'm going to take the Tigers and lay the points there. I think 6.5, it's you win by 7, I'm covering. So give me Auburn.
I want to know who put this list of games together. This
you.
Is
you did.
Fire
yeah.
him.
What
fire
is this
Sean.
Game? This is horrible.
My scout gave me some bad information. I'll go with Auburn, I guess. Protect home. This game stinks.
I am stealing the video of you putting this together. I don't care.
Come on, Dan.
I'll take Auburn at home. I don't. Auburn. Colorado at number 23, UCLA. UCLA giving 17. Games in primetime, of course. 7:30 on ABC. Back to you, Pat.
Yeah. Look, Colorado zigs when you think they're going to zag, and they zag when you think they're going to zig. They'll cover this. UCLA, not a great offensive team for Chip Kelly. They're more defense-oriented, so scoring enough to cover a 17-point spread, I just don't feel like that's going to happen. And Colorado covered easily against TCU because they won, covered as a big underdog against USC, and I think they're going to cover as a big underdog here.
I think the same. 17's too big, even though it's at UCLA. Colorado has been the Jekyll and Hyde situation, so I don't know what we're getting in LA, but hey, it's LA. Bright lights, Deion Sanders, you know? So old Deion, he performs in the spotlight in LA, and his team probably will too. So not just cover 17, but it wouldn't surprise me if they win the game.
I recall many bye week coming after a brutal loss in the fourth quarter fumbling at Rhode Island. And that next week of practice was no fun, and you had to question or not how much you love the game of football. So I believe that Deion Sanders definitely practiced the team hard. I think some guys were sitting there like, oh, we got to win this next one because we can't have the next week of practices after another big loss. I think Colorado covers this game. I think they look refreshed, and I think they look maybe a little bit dynamic. So I'll take the Buffs.
Yeah, I trust in Shador Sanders to score some points, if nothing else. Give me 17 at the start. I will take CU Buffs, and I agree with Sean's theory on that. All right, lock of the week. Next time we should have done UNLV Fresno. That was what we should have done. Six and one, two six and ones. But
yeah, make it your lock.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, but I don't know which way to lock. That's my problem, and that's usually not a lock. All right, Ross, you got a lock?
I do.
All right, go for it.
It's the game Pat mentioned earlier, Ohio State at Wisconsin. Ohio State a 14.5-point favorite at Wisconsin. Camp Randall, it'll be rocking. They played solid defense this year, Wisconsin, kind of struggling to move the ball. But they play good enough defense to keep it, I think, close at home at night with Ohio State. And we've seen Ohio State's offense struggle. They're just still not consistent. Kyle McCord at quarterback. Marvin Harrison Jr. has had a great year. He's averaging like 20 yards a catch and a touchdown a game. But I think Ohio State wins the game, but I think it's close. So give me Wisconsin as my lock to cover against the Buckeyes.
There we go. All right. I'm going to the Big 12 and a hot team, Oklahoma State, which has resurrected its season, won three straight. And they're playing a Cincinnati team that is not playing well, giving 7.5. The one hesitation here is Scott Satterfield is definitely one of those unpredictable dudes where when you give up on him is when he wins, and when you think he's riding high is when he loses. But I'm going to say they keep struggling at Cincinnati, and Oklahoma State keeps going forward, setting up a very big bedlam in a couple of weeks. So give me the Cowboys to cover 7.5.
I am also taking a Cowboys team, not Oklahoma State, but the Wyoming Cowboys getting 5 points against Boise State. They kept it close with Air Force. They beat Fresno. They beat New Mexico. This is a team of magic and covering the spread. Give me the Wyoming Cowboys.
That was going to be my lock of the week. I like that too. I like that pick. I am instead going to go with, this might be regrettable. Minnesota giving 7 against Michigan State. I think Michigan State is cooked. And this is betting against Michigan State has been fortuitous for me, or profitable for me this year, or whatever it is. I don't make any money in this race for the case yet. But Golden Gophers didn't score last week. That was Iowa. They're going to get that Michigan State defense feel a little bit better. I think Minnesota takes Michigan. I don't know if Michigan State can score many points at all. The over-under here is only 40.5. This is a tough watch.
Yeah.
but
with the rest of any games involving Big Ten West teams.
Big Ten West, watches. That's right.
I think Minnesota's better than Michigan State. So I think they'll win by more than 7. So there you go. All right. I think that handles all business. We're looking forward to a Saturday of people arguing about football, not just exclusively sign stealing. Steal your signs, coaches. Steal your signs. Change your signs, offensive coordinators.
Change your signs up. That's
change
right.
your signs up. At this stage of the year, you're walking in, kind of dumb of you, but change some signs. That's our show. So continue to subscribe, share us on social media. We'll be back Sunday night, Monday morning for sure. Overreacting to all the fun here. We will talk to you later.